Hello and welcome to Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. Today we are doing a summer special, our very first special episode of Craftcast. And it's a very exciting topic. I have with me, as always,
James.
Sean.
And we are very excited to be talking about something very topical for this summer, the 2024 Paris Olympics and Paralympic Games. Guys, have we been enjoying it so far?
Yes.
such enthusiasm.
No, I really have. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm still dealing with the come down from England losing in the final of the Euros. Still okay. Not over
again.
It yet. Again. So I'm still trying to deal with that. But a really good way of me dealing with that has been to watch some sports that I have no idea about. And there
Big
are some sports.
Sport, yeah.
Honestly, I never thought I would care. I remember in previous Olympics, I found myself absolutely enraptured by badminton.
Yes.
Haven't thought about badminton since year 10 PE. And yet here I am, really, really getting into badminton. Hello, James.
It's amazing how you sort of become an expert overnight, quote unquote expert, yeah, on a sport that you've never even watched or would never normally watch.
Genuinely, a massive football fan, rugby fan, cricket fan, but the most excited I've probably ever been about a sporting event is watching Team GB at the Kieran it's called? I'm probably saying
I don't
wrong.
Know.
Please forgive me. Okay. it's so exciting.
Yeah.
But then, like, it's just not, I feel like it's just not accessible apart from during the Olympics and Paralympics and potentially during the World Championships. You know, then you might get it on BBC Two or something in the UK, but only really during the Olympics and Paralympics is it sort of given the time and sort of awareness that it deserves.
Yeah, I think it speaks to the fact that, I mean, you'll know this better than I, Stephen, but in a lot of, let's say,
fringe sports,
actually the funding for it and how athletes fund their training and how they kind of are able to give up their time to do it is a real challenge.
Yeah, I mean, as a fencer, I'm quite jealous that, you know, footballers and whatever, they'll just get, you know, everything, like they get sponsorships or whatever and everything gets funded for them. And as a fencer, I got to find sponsorships for every single sort of like piece of kit, you know, getting to competitions. It's not easy.
What sports have you guys been watching? You referenced badminton earlier.
Well, that was previous years. To be honest with you, I've been watching, I did watch the opening ceremony. Interesting.
Let's move on.
I'll leave it there. I love watching the diving for me is a real like majestic thing for someone to like the way that someone can contort their body to do that and then and then land in the water with like hardly any splash is just outrageous. And obviously
you'd land on the concrete.
Yes. But you know what, there was a really funny video I saw, and it was someone who was like, this must be easy, right? Like, I can do backflips, especially with like a springy board. And they're like, no, not now. I've got to do three flips in the air.
I think it's also the synchronized one is mesmerizing.
It's gymnastics to a certain extent, really.
More. So at the point of recording, we've just seen Tom Daly win his epic
silver medal. Adam Peaty, silver medal.
Yeah,
I was watching the men's beach volleyball this morning, a sport that I've never watched competitively on television. I was really getting into it.
Anyway, we're all very excited about the Olympics,
is that coming across?
Yes, yes. I think so. And so we have a very special guest with us today, who I'm very excited to introduce, Mr. Ben Pritchard, brother Ben Pritchard.
Absolutely.
Who is a Paralympian and preparing to go off to the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games as we speak. Mm-hmm. And so without further ado, brethren, shall we get into it?
Let's do it.
So Ben, welcome to Craftcast. It's great for you to take the time to join us today, especially when you're so busy preparing for what's coming up in the next few weeks. I'm sure you've got a lot of work going on right now to get ready.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's actually my last day off before we head into the final 23-day push towards the game. So
we're really honoured that you're spending it with us.
Well, it's a great opportunity to come and see Grand Lodge. I've never, ever been here, so it's a great opportunity and a privilege to be here. So thanks for having me.
No, you're very welcome.
Yeah, privilege is all ours.
Let's start with the masonry, if we can. How long have you been a Mason? What got you into Freemasonry? Where are you in your lodge at the moment? Just to give our listeners a bit of context.
So I've been a Masonry since 2019, and I will be progressing to Junior Warden this year.
Great.
I'm in Corinthian 4917 in the province of South West Wales. So yeah,
which is where you're from.
Which is where I'm from. Yeah, so that was part, basically the journey into Freemasonry was I worked in the city in London, and had a cycling accident, which we'll, I guess we'll get to in a bit.
Yeah.
But decided that I needed to move home because I was struggling with accessibility in London. It's not a very easy place to live in a chair. And one of my best mates was like, well, have you ever thought about Freemasonry? Mm. And like the world, I had little to next to no idea apart from the films or the negative connotations that come with the kind of media that's out there. So, you know, he took a little while to try and convince me to come in. And the thing that sold it to me was I've known this bloke since I was 6 months old. His name is Brother Ben Hiscott. I call him Benj. His name is Ben. But Ben Hiscott, there was four Bens in our primary school.
Right.
So, we all had to,
so he became Benj. So I've known Benj since I was 6 months old. And you know what it's like. You've got friends that are so dear to you, but you can never see them because diaries just clash.
Yeah.
So he tried to sell me on Freemasonry for a very long time.
I think that's a wonderful thing about Masonry. You get to really connect with close friends of yours that maybe you don't see otherwise.
Yeah, and that was it. He said, you'll get six nights a year where we can have a three-course meal together and a drink afterwards.
Brilliant.
And that was the thing that sold it to me. And I was like, that actually sounds like a great idea. And then obviously you go through the ceremonies and the initiation and you're like, what has just happened? What has just happened? And I don't want to spoil it for anyone out there, but I was like, what has just happened? And I just remember not being able to sleep after my initiation. And I was just like so buzzing about it. And then it's like everything as a sportsman, you kind of get addicted or, you know, you got compulsive tendencies in your system. So I've kind of delved into the deep end and kind of really absorbed Freemasonry. And now I'm a massive advocate and very proud to call myself a Freemason. And I've, you know, got my brother involved. My brother is in my lodge and, you know, hoping that when I get to the chair in a couple of years' time, if I'm lucky to get to the chair in a couple of years' time, I'm hoping that I can convince my dad to come in because I think he would love it as well. Wow. So that's the...
That'd be really special. I mean, I was initiated by my father to do it the other way around. My father initiated his dad. And he said it was just absolutely spectacular. I really hope that that comes off for you.
Yeah, he's at where I was when I heard about Freemasonry in 2019. So it's going to take a long time to kind of get him across the line, but I think he would absolutely love it. My youngest brother has also shown an interest into joining, so that'd be fantastic. Brilliant. So yeah, that was kind of my entry into it. And
I was the forefather of Freemasonry in your family then.
Yeah, and I was very lucky that we've got a fantastic lodge that is full of great ritualists, and we're a mixed specialty lodge, so there's like not one profession, there's loads of different professions. And that was also very interesting. I remember sitting next to somebody that served in 2-2 regiment at my initiation and like speaking to him from back in the war days, and I was like, oh my god, this is incredible, you know. And then also speaking to somebody that was a Gower farmer that farms salt marsh lamb, and that was also another interesting conversation. And I think you just learn to love it then, and learn love the people that are involved in Freemasonry. That's a very long answer to your question.
No, it's a great answer, because my next question was going to be, you're about to become the junior warden of your lodge, and this is the point where it really starts to ramp up with the ritual you have to learn and your deep involvement in the ceremonies. Are you excited for that, or are you nervous for it, or was it a mixture of both?
It's a mixture of both. I studied law, and I read law and did maritime law masters. So I think the ritual kind of appeals to that theatrical side inside me. And I love to learn it. And what I actually found really appealing about Freemasonry is when you're an athlete, a lot of your day is spent doing a physical task. Unlike fencers, you know, amateur skills athletes. But when you do rowing, it's a physical sport. So you spend a lot of time lifting weights, you know, exerting yourself physically. But when you left work, I kind of lost that mental aptitude. You know, my brain was kind of just not being used, and I was very aware of that. And I think ritual is a great way to keep that active. So that's what I use ritual for, is just to keep my brain working and trying to remember things that hopefully that when I return to the world of work, my brain hasn't gone to complete mush. And actually speaking to a load of the gentlemen that have done it since retirement, they said it's the same thing. You know, like our DC is an ex-lawyer, and he is a fantastic ritualist. He knows everything off by heart, and it's, I know that's not everything about Freemasonry, but he is fantastic. You got to take your hats off to him. Wishing for Brother Timothy Douglas Jones. And I remember him saying that you use it to keep your brain in tune, and it's exactly what I love about Freemasonry. And now, having learned pockets of, you know, ritual, I'm like, oh, I can see what he's saying.
I know we have this guest, but it seems he's dissed fencing. Can we just carry on having this conversation without him?
No fencing, we hear glorified sword fighting.
Well, I mean, who doesn't want to have a sword fight growing up? Come on.
Grown ups.
It's a dream.
Grown adults, Stephen.
All right. Anyway, obviously, summer special. Paralympic Games upcoming.
Yep.
But we're also talking about, you know, your route to Paralympics, and you know, would like to talk to you a little bit about how you ended up in that. I believe that you did a different sport growing up, that you had a different focus on. You're a Paralympic rower, but you were focused on
triathlon and cycling. Triathlon. They are my passions. You know, oh, so yeah. I grew up. This is a long-winded way of answering this question, but I grew up with
a
congenital cataract. So I had an eye surgery at the age of 5. At the time, I was the youngest person in the UK to have that surgery by a surgeon called Dave Laws, who's sadly no longer with us. But he performed the surgery, but it meant that I couldn't do rugby, which is my family's passion, being Welsh, that runs through our blood.
Yeah.
So I wasn't allowed to do contact sports. So my parents were very imaginative, unlike my PE teachers that just basically sent me to do laps at the field during PE, because PE in South West Wales is predominantly rugby. So I just got good at running around fields, and lo and behold, because got selected for the cross country team, and then did okay at that, what represented Welsh schools and Wales and all that cross country and long distance running. And then one of my teachers one day was like, well, have you ever tried triathlon? Mumbles, where I grew up, is right on the coast, so swimming was like second nature anyway. You know, my parents were like, get down the beach, go learn how to swim, all that kind of stuff, because of safety. But you just love it, and water runs in my blood. It's like, yeah, a massive part of who I am. So she was like, well, have you tried triathlon? Because you're a good swimmer and you're a good runner. All you need to do is learn how to cycle. And that was history. You know, that was the rest they say is history. I kind of picked it up, loved it, fell in love that I could do 3 sports in one sport. Got to age group level, so like a fairly decent level, and went to the European champs and the world triathlon champs in London in 2012. So just before the Olympics, we were the test event at the Serpentine in Hyde Park,
and then
got to cycle through closed roads through like Wellington's Arch and down past the Palace. Wow. It was a really cool event. And then, yeah.
So you just love sport, basically.
I just love sport. And unfortunately, you'll know this, Stephen, in a couple of months' time, that when you're no longer a student and you have to go to the real world and start working full time, you don't have the hours to spare to compete at the same level.
Yeah.
You know, I could have continued at triathlon at an age group level if I wanted to, but I was noticing my times were getting worse the more I was investing into work. So I decided to focus on one of those sports, which was cycling, because I just loved it. That was like freedom. When you're in the lanes, it was just incredible. And that's kind of what I focused on. Got okay, got to a high domestic level. And then unfortunately in 2016, I crashed in a race and had a bleed on my back, and now I'm paralyzed from the ribcage down. So T6 level. So the way I describe it to people is if people run their hand on their sternum, when you feel your sternum stop, just 2 inches below that is where I can no longer have any sensation or movement.
Nice.
So that's kind of the level. And spent a couple of weeks in King's in London, and then from there went to Stoke Mandeville Hospital in I think it's Oxfordshire or Buckinghamshire, maybe. Mm. Buckinghamshire, I think. Mm. So yeah, I went to Stoke Mandeville Hospital, which is obviously the birthplace of the Paralympic movement.
Mm. Yeah.
And because of that, they place a huge emphasis on the benefits sport has post injury or post new life. And I got to try everything and anything. And I think I joke with British Rowing that they're ambulance chasers, like you see in American movies, like the lawyers that chase ambulances to get a payout. I think British Rowing were the same. They were chasing this injured athlete and trying to follow him to see where they go. And they, Stoke Mandeville, like I just said, they touched on like freedom after your disability. And once you've gone through the medical stage of your rehabilitation, so you're signed off by the doctors and you're there just to learn how to live your life in a wheelchair. Mm. They like put on freedom events, so you can like go home for a weekend, or you can go out in the daytimes. As long as you're back for your appointments or stay in overnight, you're allowed a bit of like just freedom, basically. You're no longer an inpatient, inverted commas, you're a rehab patient.
You're not a prisoner anymore.
Yeah, but my mum and dad and family lived 4.5 hours away in South Wales, and my London house was inaccessible in East Finchley, so I was kind of trapped in the hospital. So I had to try and make the most of the opportunities that they had there. And they used to run what I called like after school sessions, where organizations would come in, whether it be an artist, dancer, painters, whatever it may be, they'd come in an evening and you could go and try it. And one of those was British Rowing. So I went and I tried it and I was terrible, like genuinely terrible. And that was like one of my first weeks at the hospital. And then fate, I guess, you know, if you want to believe in all of that kind of stuff, I kind of think that I believe in everything happens for a reason. And British Rowing rocked up my last week in hospital, and they saw the development that had happened between the first time they saw me and the last time they saw me. And then they invited me to winter trials in January. So I got discharged from hospital on the 23rd of December, 2016. and I was trialing for Great Britain in the 13th or 14th of January 2017. Wow. I'd never rowed a boat before, and I remember turning up to trials and like sit in this briefing room, and they were talking about, you know, you're going to go out and give a 2,000 meter row, you know, you can give us your best performance, you know, this is your chance to go to the Tokyo 2020 Paralympics. And I was like, I've never rowed a boat. Like, eyes, like, you know, wide open, the whites of my eyes being seen. Yeah, I was like, oh my God.
This is my only performance.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't even know how to row. And I genuinely didn't know how to row. I've been on an ergo or a static machine indoors, but I'd never been in a rowing boat. And then the head coach, Tom Dyson, came up to me afterwards and he was like, don't worry, you're not rowing today. Like, but you're here to see what it's about and to learn. And I remember being tied to the pontoon with a rope as all these Paralympic hopefuls were rowing past me. It was so humiliating, just being tied to a rope in a boat just to learn what it felt like to feel being sat in the water with no balance. And yeah, that was the start of the journey.
Wow. First of all, thank you very much, Ben, for telling us all that really spectacular story, and can't be easy to tell, so thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
So Ben, I mean, I can only imagine sort of how much training must go into getting yourself to a point where you're representing your country at anything, let alone something as sort of technical and as, you know, huge as rowing at a Paralympic Games. What does that training regime look like?
So we'll start with 49 weeks of the year.
Wow.
6 days a week, 3 sessions a day on average. Some days 2 sessions, but most days 3. That is my training session.
Wow.
Yeah. And obviously now going into the Games, I've got 23 days of 3 sessions a day. Time to go.
And that's all on water, presumably, is that?
No, so it's a mixture of on water, on the ergo, and in the gym. So a day will typically look like a big water session in the morning, and then you might have like some punchy intervals on the ergo in the middle of the day, and then we have weights to finish the day.
Right.
So this is really full-time for you to get to this point.
Yeah, I'm now a full-time athlete, and I'm very you know, lucky to be supported by the UK lottery, national lottery.
Yeah.
We get funded by that. You touched on it earlier about the funding structure.
Yeah.
So how it works in our sport is that if you have a gold medal in the para world, if you have a gold medal, you get A funding. And then if you have a bronze or silver, you have B funding. And then in the A final is C funding, and then it tiers down like that. In the Olympic world, it's any medal is gold is A funding. A final is B funding, and then it trickles down thereafter. So I'm currently on B funding, so I'm very, you know, grateful for the support, and I can call myself a full-time athlete, but I also dabble in other things like coffee and the radio we spoke about earlier off air. But there's things that I do outside because just want to keep that brain ticking over.
Absolutely.
And when you say like final medal, whatever, is that world level or
That's world championships. You have to medal at world championships or the Paralympic Games if that's the year that it's in.
And you've been to the world championships recently, won the medal.
Yeah, so I've
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm currently a bronze medal holder at world championship level, and at the World Cup just recently gone in June, I got a gold medal, which is my first international gold.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah. Incredible.
Fantastic.
Hopefully coming into form at the right time. We'll see.
We did all
touch wood.
Touch wood, yeah. We'll do it again. James, touch the wood.
Sorry. There we go. I'm always interested as well about just looking ahead. When the Games are over and you've had this moment of achievement, hopefully, and you're super successful, and we all want you to get that gold, what does that feel like? Like, how does your life adjust after the Games? Or is it just back on it, ready for 4 years' time?
No, I'm making a very conscious decision this cycle to take an extended period off after Paris, where I want to go and try and go back into some work of some kind, you know, whether that's in the coffee world, in the media world, or in my previous job, just to decompress, because it is everything. You know, when you're investing in everything you want into this one moment in time, off the back of it, if you just go and do it again, it's a hard place to be. After Tokyo, when I didn't quite perform to the level I wanted to, I got 5th place in the final and I had a Paralympic record in the repercharge.
Congratulations. Yeah, still might not have been quite what you wanted, but
yeah, it was a huge feat. It just, when you're part of such a successful unit, British Rowing is very successful at the Paralympic Games.
Yeah.
Our head coach, Tom Dyson, at the time was the most winningest, I can't say that word, winningest coach in the Paralympic history. You know, the four is currently unbeaten for 14 years. The double are double Paralympic champions, double European champions, like triple world champions. So to come away as the only member in the squad without a medal was like a really lonely place to be.
Mm.
And then obviously your brothers at the lodge didn't care where I finished. You know, they were just so celebratory, which is another bonus of Freemasonry.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
But it was a very lonely place to be, and I kind of was very despondent with the sport because I just didn't know what I could do. There's been a load of changes in regulations in terms of strapping, different changes in terms of classification, so there was different people racing that wouldn't have been racing before. So I was just a bit fed up, and I had a big conversation with British Rowing about it, and we kind of decided to both go away. They'd think about what they could do to improve it for me, and I had to go away and think about what I could do. And there was some things that we worked upon, and we cut my off season short. So I was due to have 3 months off after Tokyo, but I had 3.5 weeks and then started Project Paris from then. And it's gone really well. You know, it was definitely worth that investment from both parties. The first year after we got a bronze medal at World Championships, we repeated it last year. And then hopefully this year, you know, we've got a gold medal at the World Cup, and hopefully we're going to go for more at this Paralympic Games. Those medals have been the first medals that British Rowing have won in my category since 2011.
Wow.
First gold medal since 2011. Wow. So yeah, the investment is going, but to answer your question, I'm going to take some time just to decompress, spend some time with my wife and daughter, because at the moment I just feel like I'm not really present at home.
So, absolutely spectacular. So it's my passion, you know, the Olympics, Paralympics. I love sport myself as well. But you are also here today to talk about physical disability in Freemasonry. And so, well, you just said that you, well, we just discussed earlier you're going to be junior warden. You have been senior deacon, and obviously that's a very well physical role. So would you mind telling us a little bit about how sort of the you and the lodge adapt to make that role work?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no problem. I think in my interview, you know, when you initiate, for those that aren't Masons, you'll have an interview panel before you become an initiate, and they didn't even mention anything about accessibility or disability. They were just, I was Ben Pritchard, and they were the Masons, and I was welcome to join.
And you were the candidate, and that's that. Yeah,
fantastic, right? And I rocked up to my initiation ceremony, having, they'd installed a brand new lift, stair lift for me. No one had told me, but that's the Swansea Masonic Hall, which is the company that runs where we meet. They didn't have done that because they knew they had a disabled brethren coming in. And they were like, well, actually, yes, you're the one in the chair, but a load of our members would actually benefit from this stair lift and the lift. Yeah. So makes sense. You're just the catalyst for that. And then I had my initiation ceremony, and there are things that happen in that that obviously an able-bodied person would do differently to me.
Yeah.
But I had no idea it was done differently,
right,
because
of course,
no one said, oh, normally you do this. They just did it. And then it wasn't until I went to watch an initiation ceremony, which was actually my cousin's initiation in a separate lodge.
Right.
I was like, well, I didn't do that. I didn't do that either. And I was like, is it just me, or is it they do a different ceremony? And my uncle was like, no, they probably just did it because you're in a chair. And you know, and when you get raised, for example, there's stuff that happens there which I can't get out of my chair and do. So somebody in the lodge just got down and
did it.
And I was like, this
in
is
in your symbolic place.
With no, and it was actually Benj, brother Benj, went down and got, which was a lovely touch. And there's been stuff like that, you know, and I've just done, or we've, the last meeting we had, we did a raising, and the senior deacon obviously normally does quite a big part in that. And I couldn't do it. And same with the second degree, the steps. I can't do steps, right? So people just volunteer without even having to question it, which is fantastic for me. The one thing I think I would like to see more is more visible disabilities in Freemasonry. In my province, I'm the only one in a chair, for example. So it would be nice to see more people out there doing it. But I always get complimented on my floor work, because I think, because I can't do the steps, I make a, I don't know, like a conscious decision to make sure that when I get to turning, I completely stop my wheelchair. I square, I turn as 90 as I can. And all of those kind of things I do out of.
And I'm sure your ritual is word perfect as well.
I try.
But what a great advocate, because I think you're right. There is a need to demonstrate that Freemasonry can be accessible to people with disabilities, and maybe a preconception which is wrong that it's not compatible with that because of the nature of the ritual which you've just referenced. But I think just the act of having you on here and being able to talk so positively about your experience, and it was just the same as it would be for anybody else with small adaptations, just goes to show that, you know, anybody can be a Mason.
Well, in season one you talked a lot about the new 7-year structure, right? And the yes if attitude. So I try to surround myself with people that have that yes if attitude. When it comes to accessibility, I say that accessibility isn't infrastructure. Mm. It's a mindset. Yeah. So if I'm the expert in my disability, I know what I can and can't do. Why does it give you the right to tell me I can't do it? Yeah. You can say, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Why don't we try this? That's a yes if attitude. But if people go into it with a no, you can't do it because you're disabled, then no one will come. But what I've experienced so far in Freemasonry is that's never been a problem. Even when visiting, people are very well open to...
Does this work? How does this work? How can we fit around this? Yeah.
So when I was listening to season one and you were talking about this, yes, if I was like, I just need to shout about it because that's my only experience so far with disability and Freemasonry.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Brilliant.
So back to the summer special of Paralympic Games. Is there, well, from the Olympic Games that's currently ongoing, you're, I assume, a sports fan as well as a sportsman. So what's been your favourite? We talked earlier in our introduction about what sports and what events we've been watching. Is there anything that's been the highlight so far for you?
Yeah, the 100 metre men's breaststroke race off for the final. So not the medal event. Yeah. I was watching the semi-finals and it came down to the second semi-final and both swimmers had 1,000th of the time exactly the same.
Oh, wow.
And that's as far as they go down in swimming. So that meant that those two swimmers had to go and do a race off an hour and a half later for their place in the final at the Olympics. And wow. I thought, wow, that was pretty special. Yeah, so that was one of my favourite moments so far.
Shows the fine margins, right?
Exactly.
And why you train so hard as you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming down to 1,000th of a second. I mean, that's really the fine margins.
Are there any other sports that you look out for in the Olympics that perhaps haven't started yet, or
fencing?
Nobody's watching but you.
It's difficult because of where we are in our competitive season.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've got teammates now that are out there competing. You know, the Olympic.
Yeah.
We're very lucky in the Paralympic squad that we train alongside the Olympic counterparts. We're one of the only sports to do so. We share a training venue, we share chefs, we share physios, we share everything. So I'm very invested in what's going with the rowing. But at the same time, if I get too excited now, I'm using a load of unneeded energy. So I'm trying to quite stay subdued because I've got to worry about my performance in 4 weeks time.
You don't want to peak too early.
But which is really difficult given my left hand dabbling in and a bit of sports broadcasting. So it's trying to keep an eye on it so I'm breast for the sports show, but also not trying to get too excited about other people's performances.
Sure.
At the Paralympic Games, the first event I'll go to watch other than mine is boccia. And if people haven't heard of that, it's basically like platonk or boules.
Right.
But with people with very high levels of disability, mainly high levels of cerebral palsy.
Right.
And I challenged Dave Smith, MBE or OBE now probably, Dave Smith. I challenged him to a game of boccia. And he wipes the floor with me. I've got full use of my arms. I can do it all by myself. And Dave has got CP, high level of CP, and he is unreal. And you watch some of these guys and women doing boccia, and you're thinking, how are you that accurate with such little movement? So that is like, for me, it's a fascinating sport. It's not a physical sport. It's like a mental skilled sport.
I mean, I know none of you care about fencing, but I do. So I will mention, I mean, wheelchair fencing is absolutely spectacular. And I remember when I was at the Commonwealth, they did an exhibition, because Commonwealth is a nice place to be able to do that kind of thing. They did an exhibition with a Commonwealth champion of able-bodied fencing and Commonwealth champion of... in fact, it might not have even been a champion of wheelchair fencing. I think it was just someone who was competing there. And they thought, oh yeah, this looks easy. And they said, and they absolutely got destroyed by the wheelchair fencer. Even though it's this, I mean, like realistically, it's the same blade, similar blade work. You know, just the strength that they have, the precision that they have, is almost like they say, like blind people have exceptional hearing. It's like they just, and they train so hard to be so at that level. It's really inspiring.
Well, that's how I'm on this podcast, right? Because Stephen and I share a mutual friend who's a wheelchair fencer, Watson. And you know, those boys are incredible. They'll be people that I go and watch at the games. I've got a blind friend called Dan Powell who does judo.
Great.
Again, phenomenal. You know, and I think that's what's fantastic about the Paralympics is that 15% of the world's population have disabilities, visual or not, and 1%, just under 1%, make it to the Paralympic Games. But for those 2.5 weeks, I am no longer the thing that people look at when they go into a room because everyone around you's got a disability. Everyone around you's got their own story. So you're just Ben Pritchard. you're just the rower from Great Britain, you're just the botcher player from Spain, whatever it may be, you feel safe.
That must be freeing.
So freeing. It was my biggest take home from Tokyo, was like how safe and comfortable I felt at the games.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to that at Paris. And I've tried to say to friends that are debutants this time round, just revel in that.
Well, and I think from what you said, that's also a similar feeling to how you feel in your lodge.
Yeah, my lodge are fantastic. They look after me very well.
Well, Ben, listen, again, repeating the sentiments we started off with, thank you so much for giving us your last day off before this fantastic adventure of yours is about to begin. From a personal perspective, it's been an absolute privilege to hear from you, and on behalf of all of us and the whole country, really, we're all behind you and we hope that you bring it home.
Thank you very much. And if anyone wants to send messages or ask me any questions about disability and Freemason, then Instagram's probably the best place to do that.
Brilliant.
So find me on Instagram.
What's your Instagram?
At Benjamin Pritch1.
Brilliant.
So yeah, please reach out. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Amazing.
Excellent.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Diolch yn fawr pawb.
Highlight of our summer special so far.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
And I can't think of a better way to end the episode, actually. No, brethren. I think absolutely amazing conversation. It is really inspiring. And for all those listening out there, watch it when it's on. Paris 2024, the Paralympic Games. Watch out for Ben. He had his Instagram handle there. And of course, you can find us, United Grand Lodge of England, on Instagram and Facebook, and UGLE_Grand Lodge on X. Podcast at ugle.org.uk. Have a great summer.
And we'll see you soon for season 3.
Goodbye.
Bring it home, Ben.
Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. The podcast is hosted by Sean Butler, Stephen Watley, and James Dalton. The producer is Marta Zandri, and the podcast is edited by Trisonic.